Voices from the Valley on Park Radio. Where the lives of the people that call the Bow Valley home come to life.
Hi, and welcome to Voices from the Valley. I'm Alan Buckingham. This week, we look at someone who fills their time giving back to the community through various volunteer activities, Ralphine Locke. Joining me to talk about Ralphine Locke is Camara Miller. So, Camara, tell me a little bit about Ralphine.
Well, she's great. She spent a good portion of her life in Banff, and she's even from a local family, the Harveys, and then married into another one. And she was actually born behind a world-famous hotel.
Well, I was born at Lake Louise, up at the chateau, just behind the chateau, in a little log house that was there at that time. And it was a long way back when the chateau was only open in the summer, so we came back to Banff every winter for school and so on.
And what had her parents out in Lake Louise?
Well, her dad was out there working for Brewster.
My dad worked for Brewster's. My mother was a Brewster. And he worked for the company, and that he ran the Lake Louise part of it, so that's why we were up there.
And did Ralphine end up living in Lake Louise for a long time?
Actually, during the Second World War, her dad ended up moving to Winnipeg and the family to Calgary.
When the Second World War came along, Banff quietened down a lot with the rationing of gasoline and so on. And so my dad was moved to a federal job in Winnipeg. So we moved to Calgary and finished up high school there. And I worked there in radio, actually. I was working for a station in Calgary writing radio copy. And advertisements and all that stuff. After I was married, we moved to Montreal for 4 years, and I worked in advertising there as well, which was a good experience. And then we came back to Calgary, but my husband was from Banff as well, so we were very oriented to Banff, and my sister lived here. And so we were up and enjoying the mountains, doing lots of hiking and skiing and so on. Some great experiences.
Now, I'm guessing that over the years, Ralphine must have seen many changes in town. Did she talk about those at all?
Yep, she did. She thinks Banff is a great place to live, but she does have some concerns.
I think it's still a good town to live in. It's got a good core, a lot of good people that really care about the town. It's so beautiful. And it's very easy to live in Banff compared to, you know, a big city. It's everything's within, you know, 5 minutes by car and 20 by walking. You know, it's a pretty wonderful place to live. And they have a very supportive seniors services, too. But I guess the emphasis on commercialism, it's over the top, in my view. And special events when we don't have the infrastructure to handle them, you know. It's just a little hard to sit back and watch. But I'm very happy to be back.
Now, a lot of people think of Banff as a ski town nowadays, but not everyone who lives here skis. Was skiing something Ralphine was into as a child?
Absolutely, and she got to be part of some of the early skiing in the area.
We were both very, very active in skiing. Did a lot of touring and as well as the downhill, and I still do a little cross-country. I was in early on in the skiing and went to the Bugaboos the first year they operated, helicopter skiing, and I was in to Sunshine when it was first developed, way back in 1935. I was 7 years old. No, 10 years old. I'm sorry, 10 years old.
And she has a great story about her first trip to Sunshine.
Well, the first time we went into Sunshine, when the first lodge was built, Jim Brewster was the one that owned it and developed it, and he asked my sister and I to go along, and I was 10 and my sister was 12. We started out from Healy Creek Cabin, the warden's cabin, got on horseback, and all the skis were strapped on the pack horses, and off we went, and it was spring, and when we got to the slide areas, the snow was soft, and the horses plunged into the snow and then had to buck out. And this happened many times. I was hanging onto the horn of that saddle awfully hard. And we got to what they used to call the Ford. It was where the parking is now for Sunshine. And then we got on our skis and climbed up Healy Creek Valley. And finally, it was a whole day. It was getting dark when we arrived, but it was a very special memory.
And what was it like skiing at Sunshine in the early days?
Well, of course, it was pretty different.
Well, there were no lifts. And there was just the one lodge, and they had actually moved the trail riders' cabin built it onto the end of the new lodge as a kitchen. And so it was really just the one building up there. And, of course, it's always had fabulous snow. But, you know, with no lifts, we had to work pretty hard. And that first trip up, we went up Brewster Rock and down again. That took the morning. And then we did Paris Basin in the afternoon, and that was it, you know. So for that reason, you know, a lot of people didn't have enough practice running downhill, you know, to compare with some of the places like Seattle that had a very active ski club. And but Jim Brewster arranged for a group of young Banff skiers to go down there to race and so on and get a sense of, you know, how skiing was developing. And of course, we did have ski jumping earlier than the downhill, and there was an old ski jump just behind the cemetery. We called it Learn's Hill because Dr. Learn had the house closest to it. And I can remember that very vividly. It's just a little jump, but it was a jump.
And of course, you can imagine the equipment was pretty different as well.
They were wooden skis with old leather bindings. You went around your heel, you know, and no, at that point they didn't have any, you know, safety gear at all. But I was in my first race at Norquay when I was 9. That was kind of fun. I got a picture of me with a lot of snow in my snowsuit. I guess I hit the dust a few times. But anyway, they're all great memories. We used to have a lot of fun.
And now Ralphine also mentioned that she was into the bugaboos early on. What was that like?
Again, things were very different. For one thing, there were no luxurious lodges.
I guess the bugaboos was probably the highlight, although we did a lot of skiing here and in different resorts in the States and so on. But the first trip into the bugaboos, they were still operating out of the sawmill with the tents, and it was pretty chilly. But it was great, and we were having a great time. And then we're almost on our last day when we're up on the Conrad Glacier, and my husband was skating, you know, on skis with a pack on his back. He tipped over and tore his Achilles tendon, and so we had to stay up on the glacier while all the rest went down, hoping that a storm wouldn't come up or something. You know, it was a little hairy. But the helicopter got back to us, and Jim Davis was a great pilot. It took a lot to scare him off.
And I would imagine that Banff itself was a little different in the winter in those days as well.
That's right. Banff wasn't always a winter destination.
In the wintertime, before the ski industry developed, it was a very quiet town in the wintertime. And, you know, we felt quite isolated. But, you know, we had great times, and, of course, with the sports and so on.
Well, we got to take a bit of a break here, but when we get back, we'll learn some more about Ralphine Locke with Kamara Miller.
Voices from the Valley will be right back. Voices from the Valley on Park Radio. Where the lives of the people that call the Bow Valley home come to life.
Hi, and welcome back to Voices from the Valley. I'm Alan Buckingham. This week I'm joined by Kamara Miller, and we're talking about Ralphine Locke. So, Kamara, did Ralphine have any siblings?
She did. Ralphine is one of three sisters, one of whom is still inspiring her today.
I had two sisters. Mary Alice Stewart was very well known in Banff. She was the first director of the White Museum and did a lot of historic work. And so I'm trying to follow in her footsteps.
So what kinds of things is Ralphine doing?
Well, she really does seem to have a historical focus.
Well, I'm on the board of the Eleanor Luxton Historical Foundation, and we support scholarships at the U of C and the U of A in the writing of history pertaining to Alberta, because that's our big interest. And we also support some of the nonprofit groups that are involved in preserving the history of the Valley.
And she's also part of the Banff Heritage Corporation.
Yeah, I'm on the Town of Banff Heritage Corporation, and we have a item on the town website called Landscapes and Legends, and we research the history of the older houses in Banff. And with the Eleanor Luxton Foundation, we have three historic houses on Beaver Street that we operate, and we're quite proud of our lovely garden in the Luxton home.
Did you get any hint as to where Ralphine got this passion for history?
Well, I know her sister was definitely an inspiration, but I think Ralphine's always had a thing for stories.
When we were little kids, we'd sit in the Mount Royal lobby, which was a lovely lobby in the old hotel before it burnt, and listen to all these people with their tales, you know, and it was just so much fun. And yeah, it gave us a real sense of what their lives were like and what ours were like. They were so tough, you know, they would tackle anything. You know, I've got stories about the trips they made in the cold, you know, it didn't bother them at all. But I think one thing it kind of points out what tough guys they were, when Sunshine's new lodge was built, they took a big cast iron stove apart, put the parts on pack horses, and got it into Sunshine, because there was no road at that point. You know, that's takes a lot of grit, but no, there's some great stories, you know, around. And, of course, the White Museum's full of wonderful archives to work with, you know, so we can develop a good, rich story about it all.
And some of the people whose stories she heard firsthand are pretty famous in the Bow Valley these days.
Well, Tom Wilson, for one, and Jim Brewster, and you know, lots of characters that came and went, and some of the early climbers that did first ascents and so on, you know. That, there's lots of good stories there. I'm really happy that they're reviving the Conrad Kane story right now, and there's a very ambitious group in Wilmer where Kane died, but he had a number of first ascents here and in New Zealand. He's quite a foremost climber, so it's nice. And then there's a nice book about Hans Moser now, too, Jake Scott worked on, and lots of good stuff.
Now, I would imagine Ralphine has some pretty good stories herself. Did she share any of those with you?
She did. There's one in particular about a bear encounter that was quite memorable.
Well, we, and with another couple, went up into Taylor Lake, and it was a beautiful night. It was just so quiet and peaceful, and nobody else around at all. We were intending, and just about dawn, I started to hear funny noises. And I woke my husband up, and I said, listen, there's an animal out there. And he said, oh, it's probably a moose. Go back to sleep. So I lay there for another little while, and it got closer and closer and sounding very much like the zoo. So we got up and started to make breakfast and looked up, and here was the grizzly standing on his hind legs about 15 feet away from us. So we left. We left our tents, you know, and just took off. And he followed us for about 2 miles, which was tough to take. But anyway, he finally turned around, went back and tore our tents down. He wanted us out of his valley. You know, he really can't complain about that. It was his valley. Anyway, that was one of the most memorable, I think, of my trips.
And now, how did Ralphine meet her husband?
The way a lot of people do. They're both local kids.
We went to school together in Banff. Not in the same grade, he was older than I. But his family were early Banffites, too, and they built the original Homestead Hotel, where Melissa sits there, you know. So, you know, we'd always gone to school together, and then he joined the Air Force and spent years overseas. But when he came back, we got married, and we weren't childhood sweethearts or anything, because he was older, and he didn't think, I don't think he even knew I was alive. Anyway, so then we went to Montreal, because he was accepted at McGill for dentistry. And so the 4 years down there were a good experience, and then came back to Calgary to live, because he said, you know, if you live in Banff, you have to work awfully hard all summer. And, you know, it'd be better for you to, us to be a little bit away from it and for you to spend our time the way we wanted to. So we did spend a lot of time in the mountains and enjoyed it very much.
In the end, Ralphine couldn't stay away from Banff, but it wasn't the mountains that brought her back.
Actually, because of the Ellen Luxton Historical Foundation, you know, it was set up and operating, and we only have one other member in Banff of the board, and that's Peter Poole, who is such a busy man. So I thought that maybe I needed to be on the ground. And Eleanor was a cousin of mine from the McDougall family at Morley, and it was a natural choice to try and follow that up. Mm-hmm. And it's keeping me very busy and very happy.
Well, it seems like Ralphine's had quite a life, and it's great to hear how she's now working to help others appreciate the Banff that she loves so much. Thanks, Kamara, for talking about Ralphine with me today.
Thank you, Alan. It's my pleasure.
Now, if you have any suggestions for people we should feature on the show, drop us a line to feedback@parkradio.ca or call the feedback line at 403-762-1536. To find out about more interesting people like Ralphine Locke, check out the podcast by heading to friendsofbanff.com and clicking the podcast link. Thanks for listening, and remember to tune in next week for more Voices from the Valley.
Voices from the Valley. Only on Park Radio 101.1 FM.